Blog Talk Radio.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road, when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Fidel. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston, Kingston.
It's time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumble Justice Radio Show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. Turn up your speakers and listen closely, since you may be asked questions later. Keep your phone handy, since we encourage you to call in your comments to the host and guests on today's show. The listener call-in number is 347-996-5983. Once again, the number is 347-996-5983. You will also find the number on the top of the homepage for the Jumble Justice Radio Show. I'm Audrey, your technical and spiritual advisor for the radio broadcast. And now, without further delay, allow me to introduce your eminently qualified and inspiring host for Jumble Justice, Professor Keith Haley.
Well, thank you very much, Audrey. You do exaggerate every week, but thank you for getting us on the radio show again tonight, and we're up on the switchboard. Our phone number is missing, but I'm not sure what that means. It says we're broadcasting live, so we're going to take Blog Talk Radio at their word about that. By the way, I've never seen so much squirming around there in the control booth of my life. Does that have to do with our subject tonight? I'll comment on that later on. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Jumble Justice Radio Show and the Blog Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, Keith Haley, and we want to thank Johnny Cash, as we do every week, for taking us on that magical, mystical trip across the United States to 90 different cities and states. And yes, he does sing that song from memory. He's probably still singing it up there in the sky somewhere. Emily, Mike, and certainly Audrey, thank you for being with us tonight. You folks did a tremendous job putting together some audio clips and background information that we needed tonight. So thank you again for doing that. Ladies and gentlemen, the purpose of our show, same as it is every week, we like to discuss news issues and events and developments in our field of criminal justice. That means police, courts, corrections, and juvenile justice. And our show is dedicated to those tireless professionals that provide those services to us throughout the United States and indeed throughout the world, in the world we live in today. What we try to do in this show is look inside the practice of criminal justice and take a close-up look at criminal justice topics. Sometimes we're a little off base in terms of an ancillary sort of topic, and tonight is one that spans over across Homeland Security, policing, business, and retail, and all sorts of things. And I'll mention that in just a moment. But a fascinating subject that I knew very little about. Very little until I started studying up for it for our show tonight. We're on the Blog Talk Radio Network, and then the magic of that network is it's a leading-edge technology brought to us by Alan Levy, who's the CEO of the Blog Talk Radio Network. And this is a network that allows a human being, an organization, any group, to broadcast live and streaming audio more than 14 hours per week. I suppose it is now. It's at least 14. And there are now 66,000 shows archived on Blog Talk Radio Network. And that broadcast that you can do 14 hours a week, half hour, 15-minute shows, whatever you want, is absolutely free. If you can believe that, jump back 10 years ago and imagine trying to broadcast on the Internet and what it would have cost you and how few people would have heard your would have heard your show. So anyway, we thank Alan Levy for that, and it's just absolutely fascinating. If you haven't been to BTR on the web, blogtalkradio.com, check it out and see all the different shows on everything imaginable, sports, religion, politics, big genre for politics, sports, and religion, and many, many other kinds of things that you would be interested in. You could spend light years listening to some of those shows, and they're very interesting. And there are names there that you will recognize, celebrities, sports figures, whatever, that have their own show. And many of the other hosts have very famous guests on their show. Tonight's show, ladies and gentlemen, is kind of interesting. And we'll have a little bit of news, as we always do, in terms of some commentary. We'll have a show about RFIDs. Now, there's probably at least two people out there saying, what is that? We're talking about radio frequency identification tags. And these little tags, I see Mike looking in the hem of a sport jacket right now. Mike, there could be one in there, but you may have to do a little cutting to find it. But radio frequency identification tags looms on us at this particular point in time. It's been used for certainly a number of years, but its potential is far greater than it's ever been. And we've had a show where we talked about a topic that can range from the absolute sublime in terms of what it can do for us and society and saving money, energy, these kind of things, to swing all the way over to the other end and see the really harmful potential that this has in terms of violating people's rights and civil liberties. So much of our technology is like that, of course, but this one in particular, since it's so discreet. I mean, it's very difficult to find these little buggers in your clothes, shoes, whatever, where they're used. So we'll talk a little bit about that. And we've got some interviews tonight with some really good people. One of the authors, co-authors of the book, Spy Chips. And we'll be listening to Liz McIntyre talk about her book. And I'm sorry I don't have the book now. I should have gotten it earlier, but it's on its way, so to speak, and I'll inhale that thing. And if we don't get through with this tonight, this is one I think most people would be interested enough in, somebody maybe to use in classes or something like that, or at least just to listen to. We might take another show next week and deal with a follow-up on this. We'll see how it goes tonight. Well, Audrey, I guess you've got a blonde joke for us tonight. Did you tell me about this one? I'm not sure. Are you set with that one? Okay, go ahead. Ladies and gentlemen, every week we do a blonde joke with Audrey. Audrey Engloth, who is from Great Britain and from the city of London, as a matter of fact. And she is a collector of blonde jokes and has done that since she was a little child and has drawers and chests full of these jokes. And here's her joke tonight. Go ahead, Audrey.
Professor Haley, Mike, Emily, and I all like this blonde joke for tonight's show. It is about a blonde strip to the doctor's office. We hope the listeners enjoy it. A young brunette goes into the doctor's office and says that her body hurts wherever she touches it. Impossible, says the doctor. Show me. She takes her finger and pushes her elbow and screams in agony. She pushes her knee and screams, pushes her ankle and screams, and so on it goes. The doctor says, "You're not really a brunette, are you?" She says, "No, I'm really a blonde." "I thought so," he says. "Your finger is broken."
That one is a keeper for sure. I like that one. Your fingers broken. He knew it, that she had to be a blonde. All right. And ladies and gentlemen, on a more serious note, we would like to keep up our campaign to stop gun violence on the streets, throughout the streets of Ohio, all the states in the nation, and even the world, if we have worldwide listeners or listeners from other nations. But the Ohio Coalition Against Gun Violence is asking you to listen to this, and I think it's directed toward the gangbangers and street criminals who are out robbing, mugging, et cetera, who are carrying firearms, and they would like them to hear this message. And I think what they're hoping for is that they'll hear this message and turn their guns into the police. So we'll go ahead and hear that message from the Ohio Coalition.
Carrying concealed handguns in Ohio? It's a deadly idea. A message from the Ohio Coalition Against Gun Violence.
Well, thank you. you very much, Ohio Coalition, and we certainly hope the right people hear that message and then turn in their firearms as they should. Let's do a little bit of the news tonight, and you know, we always like to find something unusual, and without a doubt, you can always go to Anna Nova. I don't know when she's coming back. She was the world's first virtual newscaster, and she disappeared. She did a marvelous job, never missed a day of work, and she's on leave right now and being restructured somewhere or somehow, but she's not back up yet. But anyway, they're still doing their print edition. This is about drug dealers in South London. It's kind of interesting, you know, the idea if you're smuggling drugs and running drugs, the idea is to do that in such a manner that it's hard to figure out that you're the person doing it. Well, some of the drug dealers in South London are using a very interesting procedure. Instead of using vehicles, packing their trunk or their car with drugs where they often get stopped and the police find out about it, these drug dealers are transporting their stashes in mobility scooters. You know, the little mobile scooters for people who can't walk? The police have found out that that's what they're using. Dealers are posing as disabled people, and they pack the drugs into these mobility scooters, which has a top speed of 4 miles per hour. So the police chase is not going to be too wild in that regard if they have to chase them. But police say suspects are using scooters because cars can be tracked with number plate cameras. Remember, Great Britain's got license plate readers all over the place, so they're not going to be using that. So one of the Met police officers said, "We assume that they're doing it because they think we won't search them." These are not disabled people, and I think they've gotten pretty good at figuring out that they're not. He describes one of these mobility scooters that was stopped in South London. He was covered in jewelry to look gangsta, and they were found holding Class A drugs inside the scooter. So I guess you can even deck them out to your liking. That may be a giveaway, though, so maybe not a good idea to do that. The second story is an interesting one for me. Having been to Bucharest, Romania, I believe 19 times, might even be 20 times. But one of the things that happened under Ceausescu, Nicolae Ceausescu, their dictator for 27 years, I think it was, he knocked down tens of thousands of houses in the city of Bucharest. And in his place, he built up these tall, ugly, communal communist type apartment buildings that go up 35 and 40 stories, and I have many friends that still live in those apartments. But many of the people that lived in these houses, they had dogs, and the dogs were put back out on the street. In fact, I think I've mentioned this on one or two shows before when we talked about Romania, but President Bush's security detail, it says here in the New York Times article, has a very different breed of assailant to guard against while he attends the NATO meetings in the city of Bucharest, and these are stray dogs. So these people had to put their dogs back out on the street. They continued to feed them, of course, and care for them, love them as most people do their pets. But the dogs kept interbreeding, and as they inbred, of course, they multiplied. So they got up to the point where they think there were as many as 200,000 stray dogs on the streets of Bucharest, and unfortunately, a small portion of these are dangerous. They're rabid, that type of thing. But special dogs squads of dog catchers were already stationed along the road from the airport to the Palace of the Parliament. I've been down that very route many times, where the meeting will be held to prevent the beasts from harassing delegates on foot or nipping at the wheels of their motorcades. I won't go on to read about this, but this was a big deal in Romania. The Romanian people, many of them were poor. They'd go in stores and buy meat and other types of food items, come out on the street and feed these stray dogs. And virtually every morning that I was there, I'd go out and run, maybe 3 or 4 or 5 miles in the morning, and then stop off at McDonald's and have breakfast on the way back. And I'd see these dogs once in a while, and I was never really bothered by them. In fact, some of us came to like them and bought them things and that sort of thing. But other people have been bitten. I know a professor from Illinois. She was bitten over there and had to go through rabies shots. So it's kind of a sad case where these people love their animals, but now they're trying to get a deal where they'll spay these things and then put them back out on the street, because they were exterminating them, but then the people got them to stop that. So kind of a dilemma for Romanian people and a unique one based on sort of how they grew up under communism, where they had pets and they had to put them out on the street. I thought this was an interesting one. I won't comment long on it because it doesn't require a lot of commentary, but of all things, I don't think I mentioned this last week because my news story here is dated March 31. It says that the CIA enlists Google to help do their spy work. Google's been recruited by the U.S. intelligence agencies to help them better process and share information they gather about suspects. And I've joked numerous times in classes and other places that I always thought, you know, Google must know so much about us by now, if you use Google at all, that in fact they must have been part of our National Security Agency or the CIA or something. But it says here agencies such as the National Security Agency have bought servers in which Google-supplied technology is used to process information gathered by networks of spies around the world. Google's providing a search feature similar to Wikipedia. It's called IntelliPedia, on which agents post information about their targets that can be accessed and then appended by colleagues, just like on Wikipedia. You can do that, according to an article here in the San Francisco Chronicle. But isn't that interesting? Google, I hope they've all been checked out for top security clearances. I'm sure they have. So interesting, isn't it, that Google, it's pervasive, but they have a whole government sales force where they'll go around to various government agencies in the United States. It says later on in the article here in the Times, that Times Online, says that they're also working with the Department of Transportation and a couple of other departments, the Coast Guard and the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration. So Google, there's no limit to what they're doing. If you don't have Gmail, I think you're crazy. It is hands down the best email system there is, and I have a great respect for Bill Gates and the Hotmail system of Microsoft. I was with them almost from day one, but they need to really get that beefed up to compete with the Google Gmail feature. I think what I'm going to do tonight, too, I haven't done this. I've had it on my desk for quite some time. We have a poet here in Ohio. I haven't spoken to Jim McBride for a long time, but Jim McBride is campus police chief at Lakeland Community College. Jim has an MPA, Master's in Public Administration degree, and he wrote a collection of poems a number of years back called Who Says Cops Can't Write Poetry by Jim McBride, MPA, and I thought I would read just one of these poems tonight that is, I think, rather striking and certainly comes from the heart of Chief and Professor Jim McBride. It says, a good cop is a person who has a dangerous job chasing other people who murder, who rape, and rob. A good cop is a person who works hard every day protecting all the people at work and at school and at play. A good cop is a person who helps us feel secure in case of any trouble. He'll help us, that's for sure. A good cop is a person who likes the work he does, in spite of all the labels like man or pig or fuzz. A good cop is a person who has a lot of fun, using all his training instead of just his gun. A good cop is a person like the guy who lives next door, just an ordinary person, who serves as the protector of hometown USA. Very nice poem on the part of Jim McBride, and we appreciate his book of poetry, and I would encourage you to get a copy of that. It's called Who Says Cops Can't Write by James T. McBride, and we appreciate that poem he brought for us tonight. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I think what we're going to do now is go ahead and get into the business of RFID chips, and what we're going to do here first, we're going to hear Chuck Harder from Talkstar Radio interview Liz McIntyre. And Liz is the co-author of the book Spy Chips. That book is available on Amazon.com. It's a paperback, not a very expensive book, but filled with all kinds of insights. In fact, on Amazon, you can explore the book a little bit now. You can comb through six or eight pages of it and see the table of contents and some other things. So I would encourage you to do that. But this is about RFID chips. And Liz McIntyre is the author, and I would be astounded if you will listen to this tonight and not learn some things that you didn't know, because I know I certainly did. Here we go with Chuck Harder interviewing Liz McIntyre, co-author of the book Spy Chips. Her other co-author is Catherine Albrecht.
The recording for this podcast is brought to you by the good folks from GoodPoliticsRadio.com. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to the TalkStar Radio Network. For the finest and informative and interactive talk radio programming, it's the TalkStar Radio Network, available live via your local radio station and on the internet at TalkStarRadio.com. Your feedback is important to us. Email us at TalkStarRadio.com.
Chuck Harder.
Hi there, Chuck Harder. Liz McIntyre is with us. The book is Spy Chips, How Major Corporations and Government Plan to Track Your Every Move with What's Called RFID. Liz, are you there?
I'm here. Hi, Chuck. How are you?
Thanks. So tell everybody what RFID means.
Sure. RFID stands for Radio Frequency Identification. And what it is, it's a technology that uses little microchips, some smaller than a grain of sand, to track items from a distance. And these little microchips have unique identification numbers on them to identify something from every other item in the whole world. And those are hooked up to miniature antennas. And these things communicate these numbers by radio waves, like the ones that everyone is listening to us on. And the thing is, radio waves go through solid objects, like walls, like purses, backpacks, wallets. And so if the items that we wear and carry, when they have these microchips on them, these RFID tags, those unique numbers could basically be siphoned by anyone with the right radio device. So that's in a nutshell, what radio frequency identification is. And big companies like Procter & Gamble, Walmart, and Gillette want one of these radio frequency devices on every single object manufactured on planet Earth one day. Every shirt, every shoe, every pair of pants, every car tire, everything.
Why?
Well, there's a reason for inventory purposes. It's great when you're sending widgets from point A to point B to keep track of them as they go around the world. Since these things can be read by radio frequency right through boxes, you don't have to open boxes to do inventory. You don't need human inventory takers to go into warehouses. You simply have readers on shelves, you know, taking your inventory. But there's another agenda, which is the problem, and that's when the things get on individual objects that people purchase in stores. Because, likewise, those objects that people buy can be tracked in the same way.
Such as?
Well, these reader devices, they can be hidden anywhere. They can be hidden in doorways, they can be hidden in floor tiles and ceilings, and they can look like all the other equipment that we already have at checkouts. And one day, companies are thinking that these unique identification numbers will be possibly associated with people at checkout when they use an identifiable form of payment. And so whenever those numbers show up in the environment at some point down the road, then you can say, you know, there's Chuck Harder. He's the one who must have bought that pair of shoes. You know, he's standing right here on the floor, right here in front of this cash register, or right here in front of this gun rack, or wherever you might be. So while there is a really good reason for companies to want the technology for their warehouses, the problem is when it crosses from the warehouse onto individual items, and I can give you an example, Chuck, as to what some of the things they're thinking of really are. I mean, we have done some extensive research for our book, Spy Chips, and here's an example. IBM, everyone knows, has filed for a patent on something they call identification and tracking of persons using RFID tagged items.
Yep.
That's so, huh? Now, companies have said that they would never use the technology to track people. But here they're talking about the day when every item contains an RFID tag, and those tags are registered to people at checkout, and then those things are seen later in the environment.
Oh, listen, wait until the time, wait until the time that the government says to you, we've got a terrible problem. We've got to, you know, we know you, Liz McIntyre, we know you're a good person. And we know you and your children and your family are good people. And all we want you to do is come down to the clinic, or better yet, we'll come by your house when you're all home, and we'll have this little tiny syringe, and we'll just simply inject a little tiny chip in the palm of your hand or in your forearm or wherever it is, wherever it's nice soft tissue and won't hurt, and you won't feel it, and that way we'll know that you're the good people. And when it comes time to figure out who's the good people and who's the bad people, we'll know you're the good people. And it's for the safety of you and your family. And then, of course, they'll be able to look at these chips with a spy satellite and watch you move from room to room in your house if they want to, right?
Well, that's possible. Right now, the ones that we're talking about,
right,
the chips, they really don't have a GPS device attached to them. So
they don't at this particular moment.
But they will, Chuck. Yes, you're right. It's not, you know, they can basically track you across the room or through a portal if you walk through a doorway.
Right. They are not what we call a full-blown transponder yet.
Right. But in our book, Chuck, we do talk about how there are plans on the books for such devices, including one which is a device that they want to implant much deeper than the chips are being implanted. Right now, they're putting those in the upper arm, in the triceps area. And, you know, there's an inventor, actually a company called Persephone. We outlined their patent application in our book. In the people tracking chapter, and they're saying, wow, you know, this thing can be dug out of your arm, runaways could take it out, and of course there are gangs down in Mexico called Los Chips that actually are digging these chips out of people when they kidnap them. So they want them deep inside, and there's actually a deep organ implant patent application, and they're talking about putting these in just about any place, your head, your torso. I mean, they actually have pictures of women's internal organs in places they can surgically implant these things. And these would not just be mere transponders. I mean, they would have GPS tracking devices, and they would come with accessories. They suggest, for example, a microphone that could transmit your conversations remotely, and even an electric shock device that could shock you, I suppose, if you get out of line. And these are not just, they're not just talking about these for prisoners, Chuck. I mean, they're talking about, well, that would be one application, but they're talking about them for the military. They even talked about, in this patent application, using them on corporate campuses. Can you imagine?
Well, first of all, let's explain something that people do not understand. There is right now a service called OnStar. Mm-hmm. And if you buy a vehicle with OnStar, believe it or not, the OnStar system can do the following. If you call up OnStar and you give them the right code number and you tell them that somebody stole your vehicle, they're going to turn the motor off of that vehicle, and that vehicle is going to stop.
Right.
Game over.
Right.
If you're in a parking lot and you locked yourself out of your car and you call up OnStar and you have the right code number, next thing you know, you'll hear a click, and your car door will unlock for you. If you are someplace and you have an emergency, you can push the button, and OnStar will talk to you. Now, if you think that this is the end of the line, I think, Liz McIntyre, you and I agree, it is only the beginning. Let me do a two-minute break, and when we come back, I'll give you the microphone, and you can tell us the rest of the story. Spy chips, how major corporations and government plan to track your every move with RFID. Right after this.
Okay, everyone needs a little legal help along the way. Here's a website with over 10,000 do-it-yourself legal forms for all sorts of state and federal needs. Buying or selling a car or boat, power of attorney. Writing a promissory note, making a legal demand. Now you can log on and have over 10,000 legal forms right there at your fingertips. Just go to www.chuckcartershow.com. On the homepage, you'll find the link that will take you to over 10,000 legal forms. These forms are designed to help protect your rights and to save you time and money. Just visiting the site with over 10,000 legal forms is interesting and informative. Each form is prepared by attorneys and offered with a no-risk, 100% money-back guarantee. So when you need legal forms of any kind, go to www.chuckhardershow.com. That's chuckhardershow.com. Remember, www.chuckhardershow.com, where you can link up with over 10,000 legal forms online. Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom, the television show that America grew up watching, now available on DVD. 20 episodes are yours for just $29.99. That's the money-saving price if you order online from RetroTelevision.com. RetroTelevision.com. Wild Kingdom, featuring Marlon Perkins and all the regular features that made this show a favorite family watching habit. Sorry, phone orders are not available at this low price of $29.99 for 20 episodes. Order this set now and get 3 episodes of famed primary researcher Diana Fossey from Gorillas in the Mist. Order from RetroTelevision.com or go to www.TalkStarRadio.com. Save 25% with the online offering Wild Kingdom from RetroTelevision.com and TalkStar Radio. We are back with Liz McIntyre, Spy Chips, How Major Corporations and Government Plan to Track Your Every Move with RFID. Website, spychips.com. Okay, Liz.
Yes, Chuck.
You got it.
All right. Well, yeah, I'd like to talk about IBM for just a minute because they're a pretty scary company. As you may know, Chuck, they actually at one point were helping the Third Reich with their technology needs, which makes this company particularly frightening. They actually developed the punch card technology and leased it to Hitler to help track all of the Jews' possessions. And now they've got this plan to use RFID to track people one day, they hope, when RFID tags are ubiquitous in the environment. And they talk about, in this identification and tracking of persons using RFID tagged items, using this thing they call the person tracking unit they developed to serve up advertising to people. So if they see a tag in the environment, let's say on a baby bottle, it says, their scanner says, oh, this is a baby bottle. Well, they might think, well, gosh, we'll serve up an ad for diapers because that person probably has a baby. But it goes way beyond just marketing. They've actually suggested in this patent application that the government could track people using these tags. And they name in there all the places they think they could track them. And here it is. This is from a patent application. It says, although the systems of the present invention have been described in the context of a retail store, it can also be applied to other locations having roaming areas, such as shopping malls, airports, train stations, bus stations, elevators, trains, airplanes, restrooms, sports arenas, libraries, theaters, museums, etc. And this is from the people who, by the way, are now saying that they're offering their privacy advisory services to companies thinking of implementing RFID.
Well, what about the supposed angel service that is already available that will track you, that already have a chip that can track you by satellite?
Right. You're talking about a digital angel, which is sort of a wristwatch at this point.
Yeah.
They're also talking about one day having an implant that could track people. But that's voluntary right now. And the problem, Chuck, is once items in stores carry these tags, which by the way can be put in products and you'd never know it because they're so hard to find. I mean, they can be slipped in between the layers of cardboard.
Right.
They can be sandwiched into plastic. They can be put under the insole of a shoe. You'd never know it. And there's no requirement for labeling. Then they could do a fair amount of people tracking through the things you're wearing and carrying. And that would not be voluntary because basically what are you going to do when you buy something that's got a tag very deep inside of it? It's very hard to remedy something like that. Right now, the digital angel is a voluntary thing that you can use to track your children around with to find out where they are. But like you said, one day it might not be voluntary, which is kind of scary. And we have some inklings of that because, as you may know, One of the highest health officials in the world, Tommy Thompson, who recently retired from the Bush cabinet, he was the former, he was the Secretary of Health and Human Services, left his government employment, and where did he end up? VeriChip, Applied Digital, the people who make the VeriChip, and the digital angel. And now, why do they want someone with those kinds of Washington contacts, that kind of a person who's going to command a huge salary?
Gee, what a surprise.
And he, you know, so there's an agenda. And in fact, he went on CBS MarketWatch not long after joining the VeriChip board, and he told CBS MarketWatch that he thought it would be a fabulous idea to have these chips in people because it would help them. It would help them. He was talking about this huge medical record database that he's envisioning, and all your medical records would be associated with this database. And then he's talking about, well, not just that, but how about our military? Why have dog tags? These things would be a great replacement for dog tags in the military. And we actually, by the way, that interview was archived at one point on CBS MarketWatch. It seems to have disappeared. Maybe someone could find that again. But we do have a transcript on spychips.com if you want to go there. And it's at www.spychips.com, and it's under scandals. You'll see there. We have a whole, it's, let me tell you what the link is here. It's Tommy Thompson. Let's see, it says here. Yes, ex-Bush cabinet member praises and recommends VeriChip. If you click on that, you'll get the transcript.
Liz, you're going to think I'm crazy, but in about 1994, that's 11 years ago, I did a program with a gentleman back then who brought to me the implantable little transponders that were available back then. They were using them for cattle and for pets.
Right.
And they injected them with a big hypodermic needle.
Right.
They were about the size of a grain of rice.
Okay.
And they were little bitty things, and they had you could see the wires and what have you. But if you would put a wand across them, they would read out a serial number.
Right.
And they started to be used in the early 90s for cattle and such as that, and they implanted them, and it was an easy way to keep track of cattle and other animals. And this guy was a retired L.A. policeman, and he said, the day is coming, they're going to be putting these things under your skin. I believed him, but most people back then said I was crazy.
Right. Well, you know, and people are saying that we're crazy today. We've published this book, Spy Chip, and you know, people are saying, oh, you're out of your mind. Well, as you and I know, it's true. And, in fact, in our book, Spy Chip, let me just mention that we are bringing information out in the words of the companies themselves. We have gone through their patent documents. We have gone through their promotional materials. We have been to their conferences and gone through hundreds and hundreds of their documents and white papers. We have found confidential documents they left laying out on the Internet, which we bring out here. And so it's all in their own words, so it's very hard for them to deny. And as far as what you're saying with the that chip, there are two things. First of all, that little implantable glass encapsulated chip you're talking about, actually, you know, it's been said it's the size of a grain of rice, but I eat long grain rice, and I have never seen long grain rice that big. It's like the diameter of a dime. It's a big thing, and there's a big honker of a tool to put that in, like you say, a hypodermic type thing. The other thing is, back in 1994, a lot of people don't know, and we outline the story here in Spy Chips in the People chapter, the U.S. government has already used it to track people. And what they did was they hired this man who had these chips for cattle.
Right.
The guy said, you know what? We could use them to track people. And so when there were the Haitian boat people, if you recall,
mm-hmm.
back in, I believe it was 94, the Operation Sea Signal, if you recall, they were all coming over because of all the strife in Haiti, and they were going to Guantanamo Bay. Well, what they did was they put these little bracelets on them, and those bracelets contain radio frequency identification, and they strapped them on, and under penalty of going to a really, really awful place, you know, with barbed wire and everything else, you know, you were not allowed to take those bracelets off.
All right. Well, gee. Was it Aldous Huxley who wrote a book called The Brave New World?
Uh-huh.
I think so. Mm-hmm. Brave New World. Gee, let's take a couple of minutes out now. I'll go grab some Soma and be right back. We're talking about spy chips with Liz McIntyre. Don't go away.
Now a flashback to the year 1945. Everyone was getting into the war effort.
When the Führer said, "We just go after Ace, we hire, right in the Führer's face."
Gable was one of the most dashing Air Force pilots. Joe Pelosa joined up too, as did Captain Marvel, Superman, all to do their part, tangling with the Axis bad guys around the globe. Radio brought us the debuts of A Sudden Time and Meet the Press. And during a newspaper strike in New York, the mayor read Sunday funnies over the air.
Now, children, I know you're all disappointed today that you didn't get the funnies. So gather around. Here's Dick Tracy. Let's see what Dick Tracy is doing.
A not-so-funny thing happened when a B-52 bomber pilot on his way to Newark Airport crashed into the Empire State Building. 13 people were killed instantly.
I love you.
Carousel was lighting up the Great White Way. You could buy a ticket for just $1.20. And Lorette Taylor gave one of the most beautiful performances Broadway has ever seen in The Glass Menagerie. Harry Como clowned around with Hubba Hubba Hubba.
Hubba Hubba Hubba. Hello,
Hubba Hubba Hubba.
And Vaughn Monroe and his band were on every circuit. In 1945, Hank Greenberg went straight from the service to Detroit, where he led the Tigers to a world championship, and Jackie Robinson was signed by Brooklyn's Branch Rickey as the first black player in Major League Baseball. You could have watched all this from a bleacher seat for about 55 cents in the year 1945.
Liz McIntyre with me, Spy Chips, How Major Corporations and Government Plan to Track Your Every Move with RFID. A website is spychips.com. Liz, I read an interesting article, I believe it was in yesterday's Wall Street Journal, that after Katrina, Rita, and Wilma, the government has suddenly realized that they have a terrible communications problem. Cell phones are not reliable. Landlines are not reliable. Even though fiber optic is wonderful and it's all over the country, the switching facilities can run out of fuel, go underwater, be sabotaged, what have you. Right now, the government, the United States government, is very quietly moving to all satellite communications. Did you know that?
Yes, there's a lot going on behind the scenes.
Yep.
Yep, and it's pretty frightening stuff.
One of the companies that is still doing very well, they went through bankruptcy, they were bought by a venture group, and now they're going to be a $1 billion outfit, is called Iridium.
Right. Well, a lot of this is tying in with RFID. Actually, Chuck, and in our book, we talk all about transportation systems. And one thing they're talking about are intelligent transportation systems, and GPS, and satellites are going to be a big part of that, as well as wireless hotspots on the road. Pretty much, we talk about this BII initiative, the government calls it, and there's a plan to actually put an RFID device, a spy chip, along with a GPS device, and along with a wireless connection in every vehicle that rolls off American assembly lines for American cars, for the American public.
Right now, let me just stop you and tell you that if you have a car that was made in the last few years, they can aim a gun at that car, pull the trigger, and stop your car.
That's absolutely right, because it's so dependent on computer technology, and radio frequency can stop it dead in its tracks. That's absolutely right. But, the news is tightening, because not only are they going to be able to do that, they're going to know where you are at all times. It's going to enable every road in America at some point, if we don't stop it, to become a toll road where they'll monitor you, and every time you pass a hot spot on the highway, your car will upload information about where you are, who you are. And so there'll be a very detailed pattern of everything that you do. And in fact, it's already starting to happen. People don't know. We're using toll transponders to pay our tolls.
Yeah, well, they're already doing that in New York, Washington, on the metro. But, you know, the other thing is I had a bunch of truckers tell me that they're seeing the most amazing things. They're seeing these slits in the interstate highway. With like metal on either side, and then there's like a little gap. Mm-hmm. And one of the truckers stopped his truck, and he looked at it, and there was a little house nearby.
Mm-hmm.
And he asked the guy in the little house, he said, "What is that?" "Oh," he said, "if we push a button, a 4-foot-high steel gate comes up and stops all the traffic."
Right. Right, I believe that. Yeah, there are a lot of things going on, and you know what? Those toll transponders kind of goes in with that. Do you know that they're tracking those toll transponders, miles in the toll booths? They're not telling people they're using it for more than just for people paying tolls. I've got evidence of that. We talk about it in Spy Chips, and people don't realize that the privacy policies aren't there. People are being told. I mean, we're being monitored without our knowledge. I think most Americans, if they read this book, Spy Chips, they're going to be shocked at the kind of things that are already going on, the things that they have planned. And let me do a check. I know it's scary stuff, but telling people, I'm sure people out there are just like, "Whoa, my gosh, this is awful."
We got 10 seconds.
All right, well, they need to buy the book. You can buy it at Amazon.com. It's at over 30% discount.
Okay, or go to SpyChips.com. SpyChips.com.
Right, so
Well, I think if you use your imagination just a little bit, you can see the implications of this RFID technology, from simple things in the home to the military to transportation to police work. I mean, on and on and on. Corrections work, certainly. And we're not talking about somebody GPSing you because you're carrying your cell phone around. We're talking about these RFID chips now that'll have transponders in them transmitters in them that will allow them to broadcast their signal out. And the cost of these things, that's been one of the drawbacks. They're now down to about 5 cents, 4 cents. I think when this gets down to about a penny, an RFID, then these things are going to proliferate all the way across our society and serve us well in many things. Like, it can tell you when your refrigerator is empty and what you need and all that sort of thing, or it can be something that could secretly track you in virtually every venue that you enter. I'm going to go ahead and play Angie Quare's interview with Clara Jeffrey. Clara Jeffrey did some work for Mojo Radio and did an in-depth study on the RFID chips, and I think I want to get that in the can tonight so that you'll have both of them in one show. So this is Clara Jeffrey being interviewed by Angie Quare on Mojo Radio.
Air America is proud to present a fact-based initiative. Mother Jones Radio. Great reporting, straight up. Here is your host, Angie Quare.
This is Mother Jones Radio. I'm Angie Quare. Readers of Mother Jones Magazine have been giggling for many years now at our Diddley Awards, a compilation of recent congressional gaffes and outrages, with the final honor going to the biggest doofus of the U.S. House or Senate. This hour, we will meet the man behind the diddlies and find out, among other things, how he keeps the nominees down to a manageable number. Holly Morris will talk about her new book, Adventure Divas. You may know her PBS series. She gives us a backstage peek at that. It profiles women making political change all over the world. Both of those to come, and in just a few minutes, Maury Meniscus brings us a boxing match refereed by God himself. First up, though, let me tell you about my pants and what my pants have to do with your right to privacy and the wars on crime and terrorism. I bought myself a new pair of slacks last week, and tailors are very nice, and I was cutting off the price tag, and I found embedded in a satin tag, way down along the back inside seam, my very first ARFID. You know what an ARFID is? An RFID, radio frequency identification device. It's a scannable, readable radio barcode carrier, and it lets manufacturers and merchants track their stock, and conceivably track you if you buy something with an ARFID in it and don't cut it out. ARFIDs are implanted in library books, swipe cards, and reportedly in VIP customers in a Barcelona beach bar. They're one of many ways that humans are being tracked these days. where they are, what they buy, what they're up to. Clara Jeffrey, deputy editor for Mother Jones Magazine, has compiled for the November issue a two-page spread on the watchers, the people and the devices doing the tracking. Every one of those, like the ARFIDs, is a double-edged sword. It's a potential compromise of privacy for lower prices or better government monitoring of dangerous people. Clara, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Angie.
Clara last joined us with a fascinating glimpse of Americans on vacation. You can find that in our archive at motherjones.com. And the layout, Clara, is similar here. You've gathered small telling facts about GPS cell phones and about FBI surveillance tapes, and every one of those describes how the new technology plays out in the real world.
That's right. It's a sort of window into that dilemma that you were talking about, that we're trading some freedom for lower prices, perhaps some better security, but really, we're trading that without thinking too much about it, and to a large extent, without knowing much about what's happening to us as individual consumers and citizens.
A two-page spread from some sources would be all gloom and doom about how awful this all is, but in fact, you've balanced it. I mean, there's some things that are downright funny, there's some things that are neutral, and there's some that raise the red flags. Let's go to the red flags. What are the ones that made you go, whoa?
Well, I think just the use of video surveillance cameras, their proliferation, and when you look at how many of them, there are 15,000 in Manhattan and counting, and, you know, that seems reasonable on the one hand, but when you look at whether or not those cameras actually do reduce crime, there's really not that much evidence to show that they do. One study that was performed in Britain showed that more cameras led to a 2% drop in crime, but just putting in some better streetlights led to a 20% drop. So, you know.
So is the money being spent properly is one question.
That's one question. And the other question is just, you know, can you travel around Manhattan without being constantly surveilled? And what implications are there past sort of deterring terrorism or just ordinary street crime to having every single citizen monitored by the government or by corporations?
That was a neat example of how counter technology comes about, because now you can go online and find out what route you can take with the fewest surveillance cameras.
That's right. There's a group called iSee, which is a web application that lets you map the paths of least resistance around Manhattan. There's also groups like the Video Surveillance Camera Players that do walking tours, pointing out all this, you know, sort of taking that beloved New York institution of a walking tour and pointing out all the street cameras. And we also, in this issue, have a map of Times Square showing where all those cameras are, and all different kinds, military cameras, city cameras, private cameras, cameras on embassies. I mean, there's just all sorts of people checking out what you're doing when you're in Times Square.
See, that's one side of the equation. The other side is stuff that kind of makes you smile and think, this can't possibly be abused. I can't imagine that what you embed in Parmesan cheese to say what the cow has been eating can possibly compromise your maybe the cow's privacy can compromise.
Right, so these RFID tags can be used to sort of monitor inventory in any number of ways. So I guess the thinking here is by putting an RFID tag in a giant wheel of cheese, that that cheese gets shipped all around the world, and that I suppose the end suppliers know exactly where that cheese has come from and how to date it and how to sell it to their customers. With things less perishable than cheese, you know, it would also have some ability to monitor and turn over your inventory.
You know, since you're talking about the ARFIDs, you have another interesting data point in there, that their name has gotten so bad publicly with everyone alarmed about the potential privacy issues, there's an agency that was hired to give them a more pleasant name.
That's right. I mean, it was, and found out about that because a former Wisconsin governor, speaking of cheese, and Secretary of Health and Human Services, Tommy Thompson, announced his plan to get an RFID tag implanted into him, which, you know, this happening with pets, but he was the first cabinet-level official I've ever heard of to get this done. And then sort of digging around on that issue, we found out that a PR firm back in 2002 had sent out a memo to RFID manufacturers suggesting ways to, quote, neutralize the opposition to this technology, including renaming the devices green tags and bringing lawmakers into the inner circle. So I guess that's where Mr. Thompson falls into play.
It sounds like it hasn't worked so far.
You know, it's an issue that the people, you know, there are a lot of very obsessive websites about this that are worried about the technology. I mean, it's also something that if you just look at websites that are about, you know, inventory management and sort of, you know, pretty workaday things, they look at it as, hey, here's this great new technique that allows us to just manage our inventory.
Clara Jeffrey, deputy editor of Mother Jones Magazine, compiled exhibits watched for the magazine's November issue. Clara, thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much.
So technology is compromised. It saves a library time and money tracking overdue books to the right borrower, but anybody who hacks into that system or subpoenas library records can decide that you're reading dangerous material and call the authorities on you. It's that kind of compromise where the Electronic Frontier Foundation comes in. The EFF, you can find them online at www.eff.org, has been protecting personal rights in the digital world since 1990. Lee Tian is the EFF's senior staff attorney specializing in privacy, free expression, and freedom of information. He's joining me online from San Francisco. Hi, Lee.
Hey there.
Now, this is a really timely discussion for your organization because you've just busted open a story about the U.S. Secret Service embedding or agreeing to help embed tracking dots in color laser printer that the government worked with manufacturers, big names, and printers that a lot of us have in our homes to embed these coded, nearly invisible dots. What's up with that?
Well, it's a very, very interesting thing, one that I think a lot of people find both very creepy and sort of unbelievable if it weren't for the fact that we can prove to anyone that these dots are actually in the output of these printers. And for this model of the Xerox technology, we're able to actually decode it, although don't ask me the decoding details. You know, the implications are rather remarkable. I mean, I think there are two main things that I'd like to point out. First is that what we're talking about is a technology that can be used to track the origin and possibly the author of documents because they are using this kind of compromised equipment. Now, we might not worry about that very much in the United States, although I think there are plenty of folks one of the reasons why I think we've gotten a lot of interest from the media is because the media prints things on paper and they wonder whether their Xerox copiers or printers are going to be ratting them out in some way when they push out a piece of paper. But, you know, the bigger picture is, you know, the example that we use of the Russian communist dot or of folks in other countries who are using, rely on paper. Print paper out, and the idea that they might be ratted out because of this technology is rather disturbing. And that's one of the ways that American companies and American technology in some ways can sort of export surveillance.
Well, some of the questions, legal questions here come to mind.
Well, I can see our listeners tonight heading for their closets if they haven't already, checking the hems of their garments, looking under the inner soles of their shoes. I mean, you could have an RFID chip there. Just think of the implications, those of you who work in education for the university. Sure, I read that textbook. You could put a couple RFIDs in there, see if they ever turned those pages, or I was home visiting my sick mother instead of being in class, and we could tell that they're on the other side of campus doing whatever. I'm just kidding, but the implications are incredible, aren't they? Very interesting subject. I would encourage you to go to the website, spychips.com, and also look at the book, if you can, Spy Chips by Liz McIntyre and Catherine Albrecht, and that's available on Amazon.com for actually just, I think, $11 or $12, if it's that much, plus shipping. So Audrey's giving the signal that it's time for signing off tonight, so look on the website and see what we're going to do next week. And we've enjoyed it very much, and we'll be meeting again, I am sure.
We'll meet again. Don't know when. Don't know when. But I know we'll meet again. Some sunny day, smiling through, just like you always do, till the blue skies drive the dark clouds far away. So will you please say hello? All the folks that I know have
Blog Talk Radio.